From the Roots Up. CIUT 89.5 FM. Toronto.
Welcome to the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. Well, today we're going to talk a little bit about a new book. It's a reprint, a redoing of Einstein. It couldn't be more timely. Einstein on Israel and Zionism. And it was edited, gathered together by, it's the writings of Albert Einstein himself. By Fred Jerome, and a wonderful feature of this new book is that it includes an essay written by Fred Jerome. It's an appendix to the book with the title, the killing of Count Bernadotte, UN envoy to try to have a peaceful establishment of the famous two states in 1948, and he was murdered by agents of the Irgun. Actually, I guess it was the Stern Gang. You have to get the book. I think I'm right about this. Stern Gang. It's very apropos of all the discussion that we can't talk to terrorists, et cetera. The Stern Gang were terrorists, and they did kill a UN representative, and none of them were ever punished. And you won't know about it unless you read Fred Jerome's book. Fred Jerome was, on more than one occasion, a guest on the Taylor Report. We really respected his work. He was a courageous journalist. Writing the essay on Count Bernadotte's assassination being an example, because it wasn't a highly appreciated contribution, since most of the arguments, and certainly in NATO countries, is the direction they always take is that Israel actually is sort of a semi-official member. They're not a member, but there's sort of there. So they do a lot to protect them, particularly on the intellectual front. And we think there's a possibility we'll be talking to a representative of the Network in Solidarity for Peace and Justice in Rwanda, who they have been supporting, working to win political rights, particularly the right to form an opposition party and to run for office in Rwanda. The figure most known widely in the world is Victoire Umuhosa, Ingabire Umuhosa. She, for her efforts, has been put through an awful lot. She's been in prison because she declared that she wanted to run for office, but as she also was critical of the one man power of Rwanda. And it's very important we talk about this issue, because if you were to read the editorials in our papers, most of the mainstream media, there's a party line on Kagame, and that is that he ended the genocide and brought democracy and progress. And none of that is true, actually. But one thing, the most important to know about it, is that Victoire very courageously chose to put her life on the line, basically, to say, well, if we're a democracy, I'd like to run for office, and I have a party, and I'd like to register the party. And Well, several members of her executive have died, and for having the temerity to do that. And it really puts, we're talking about exposing Canada here, because Canada is making a great noise about how much it is committed to democracy and how it's not going to recognize, does not recognize the electoral results in Venezuela, which was a contested election. No one denies that there were tens of thousands, millions of votes on either side. It was a real contest. People, you know, publicly put forward their views, etc. But the Canada didn't like the outcome, and Canada, when I say that, I mean under the advisement of the great leader in Washington, said we don't like the result and we're not recognizing, and because we're really committed to democracy. They've never raised a voice on behalf of the woman imprisoned. Basically, she's under house arrest, and I would call it, because she's certainly not free to move about without the say-so of the authorities in Rwanda. They've never argued that she should be allowed to run at all. And they have very good relations. They say critical things once in a while, but the relations are all very solid. And they actually talk about the elections as though they were real when they were not. When I say their elections, Rwanda's elections, Mr. Kagame wins by 99%. So this is something to note. We talk about it on the Taylor Report often. It is the pure hypocrisy on this matter. And on the question of it, Venezuela and Canada's position, it's really out of line. They did have an election. They have courts. They have a system counting ballots. It's theirs. It's Venezuelans own their process. And it's up to them to decide. And Canada doesn't accept that, and the U.S. doesn't accept it. They're the main troublemaker on the issue. This is the Taylor Report. It is 89.5 FM. And there's a headline in today's Star that really, we're all supposed to be alert to foreign interference. So I think I spotted some foreign interference. I'm really, probably we ought to call attention to it. It says the top Biden advisor calls for united front against cheap imports at liberal retreat. So a top gun in the U.S. administration is attending the Liberal Party retreat in Canada, and he's here to say that we have to put 100% tariffs. And then he says, well, of course, we don't dictate. Well, okay, Canadians ought to say, well, that's probably a good idea to have him there. Now invite a representative of the Chinese government to say why they think that isn't a good idea. And by the way, China's a member of the World Trade Organization. All this rhetoric and babbling coming from basically editorial writers posing as analysts, but is contested. They write as though and speak as though all these things are known and agreed to. They're not agreed to. And I would suggest, I do know, I was looking at the Chinese media. I know that's wrong, and we all need to be spanked if we look at the Chinese media. But they said, the U.S. has been trying to fudge because it's falling behind, and they've been using every kind of trick to dictate and not follow the rules of the World Trade Organization. I do think that Canada should invite someone from China who has that point of view to come and explain that point of view. By saying that, I'm actually just exposing the phoniness of the whole thing. It's not a discussion. This is dictate, and this is foreign interference, which is official and authorized and permitted. But One of the things, just a detail, on the matter of Chinese vehicles, electric vehicles, in the trade business, if one party, like the U.S. automakers, want to make their argument that there should be tariffs and whatnot, or that China should not be permitted to do this, they have to go through a process in the World Trade Organization. And, of course, these things have to be adjudicated. Here's the detail that the Chinese mentioned that I think is, Canadians will not be surprised to hear about it. Of course, you have to have judges to do that. And the U.S. has been hanging the judges part of the equation in a closet because they're not permitting new judges to be appointed, so there are vacancies, and this is causing a logjam of settling disputes, it's set up in order to prevent stress and problems and potential hard feelings and worse. That's why they have the World Trade Organization. That's why they have an adjudication process. But the Americans are blocking appointments because they're afraid, frankly, that those judges would not find in their favor. So the best they can do is block through, I guess I would call it bureaucratic means, but so causing a malfunction in the adjudication process of the World Trade Organization. So here's a representative of the power that's doing that, and he's going to what they call a liberal retreat. It's a secret meeting where they plan what they're all going to do, the Liberal Party. And so he comes and attends. His name, White House National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan. He really uses palsy language. He says, we're like-minded countries, so we should agree on these things. And at one point in the article, they say how Canada should confront China on a range of issues that are core to Canadian national security concerns. Actually, I mark that because we don't have Canadian national security concerns. We have NATO concerns. They're not national. And just as if you want to talk about foreign interference, again, in a more detailed and police way, the we're members of Five Eyes, Canada's in Five Eyes, which is cooperation amongst five white Anglo-Saxon Christian Protestant countries, England, the UK, Canada, New Zealand, and Australia, and the US. And they are the ones who dictate what Canada will do. We're sharing intelligence with them, which means that we're compromised. By definition, we're compromised. And people who studied the Five Eyes point out that one member of the Five Eyes can ask the other member of the Five Eyes to do work spying on their own citizens. And an Australian intelligence guy can get a Canadian intelligence guy to do something to the Australian citizens, that is, spy on them, which he's not permitted to do by laws. And so it's a tag team match, except there's five members of the team. And here we have this national security guy, who, by the way, after he leaves his secret meeting with the Liberal Party, will be off to China. And he says, we want to avoid conflict. We're trying to reduce tension in the world. Well, stop your trade war. Stop cheating. Tell us what the World Trade Organization thinks, because if you're all members of it, we'd like to hear their opinion, not that of Mr. Sullivan, who has got his fingers in a couple of wars right now, and he's not one to bring ease to tensions. It's the Taylor Report. We're going to be talking, I believe, soon with Robin Philpott. And the book is we're going to be discussing is Einstein on Israel and Zionism. In the meantime, while we're getting to that, I'll just mention Fred Hahn is an outstanding Canadian trade unionist. He is elected and supported by his members. There is a in-house flare-up, which is their business. And there has been an attempt. There's almost an annual, semi-annual run at Fred Hahn because he is a leader. He is articulate. He does his job. Everyone who works in the union movement or around it knows how exemplary, actually, his leadership is. He's rather in the mold, not in the mold, but close to the mold of Sid Ryan, who also former leader of the CUPE, Ontario. And so let us all hope that that those who engage in character assassination and smearing and who try to, you know, create the idea that there's a huge uproar and create panic and hysteria, everybody ought to just calm down. Let's remember, unions are in the forefront of fighting racism. CUPE is among those. To be a member, if you're a member, you're protected in terms of your ethnicity, your religion, and those your freedoms and common respect are guaranteed, and will be if they're violated. The CUPE will fight for you, and no matter who you are, what your faith, etc. That happens to be the union movement. That's what the union movement brought to and has helped transform Canada into a much more accepting and open society, whereas we were once dominated by people who openly asserted that their form of Protestantism should rule the country. So kind of keep that in the back of your mind when you hear people blowing whistles and banging pans. That's just a show. They're trying to create hysteria. So, solidarity with Fred Hahn. Flat and Scruggs, as I say, one of them is always flat. So, this is the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I attended a meeting on Saturday. I was very honored to be invited to speak at a celebration, appreciation of Peter Rosenthal, who many times on this show, because Peter was always stirring up matters, and he and Charles Roach, we often all three of us worked together on many things. He had many causes, and we were always, the mic is always there for Charles and Peter. So I thought it might be of interest to the listeners, since I spoke in it, and the law was speak for 5 minutes. So I have a 5-minute speech, which I gave on Saturday, and we could share it. And it went roughly this way. I told the people of the hall that when I left my house, and this is true, I looked at my big photograph of Charlie Roach, and I waved at him, and I said, I'm going off to a tribute to Peter. And he smiled at me. It was my good fortune to accidentally meet Peter in November of 1967 at the U of T student protest against Dow Chemical links to atrocities being committed in Vietnam. It had to do with napalm, and the students were occupying a building. Peter and I were there and bumped into each other. And we were kindred spirits, being socialists, opposing colonialism, racism, and class oppression, and the mad notion of American exceptionalism. And therefore, we became fast friends. And through our friendship, I came to know Peter's family in New York, his wonderful parents and brothers, Pete's mother was a very perceptive political thinker and activist. His dad was a sweet man who wore his heart on his sleeve and always raised interesting questions. They were veterans of struggles for many great causes. You could study their lives and learn much about modern history. They were very generous people and fun to be around. And I met Peter's maternal grandmother, and that was a special meeting. Peter's brother Wally took me to visit her at her apartment, and she was living alone, and she was blind, but reading Tolstoy in Braille. And I was mightily impressed, believe me. And she told us a story of her family, Russian family, who, when the Tsar fell, their father, the leader of the family, he said, well, that's it. The revolution is over. It's a success. The Tsar is gone. And she and her brother, she said, argued loudly, and they said, no. We have to have a government of workers and peasants. So later, when I got back to Toronto, I said to Peter, wow, you are a third-generation Bolshevik. That's a great responsibility. I was joking, or half-joking. Now, two quick matters that I wanted to mention, and most people know, it's an almost legendary story of how Peter stood on the planter at the U.S. consulate to speak against the Vietnam War, was told to get down, and was arrested, and went on to become, because he defended himself, went on to become a remarkable lawyer. Now, there's a detail from that event that I haven't seen others mention. Standing close by at that time was a slender young woman in Levi's, torn Levi's, who regularly attended our demonstrations, and she wrote a smart and amusing poem naming Peter and the policeman. It was published in a popular newspaper, anti-war paper, I should call it, anti-war paper. Well, now that was Paulette Giles, now a widely acclaimed novelist, and her most recent book, News of the World, has been made into a movie with Tom Hanks, and she is living on a ranch in, of all places, Utopia, Texas. I would suggest we look around and find her poem about Peter Rosenthal and that demonstration. Second thing I want to mention is Peter had a lifelong interest in the Rosenberg case that became a hammer of the McCarthyites to break up all progressive causes to this day. We talked about it often, Peter and I, and shared details of our research. Peter located Morton Sobel, a co-accused with Ethel and Julius, and who pulled a long stretch on Alcatraz. And thanks to his efforts, the two of us interviewed him on CIUT. We also spent time with him in New York during a visit. And Sobel was so pleased with Peter and trustful of him that he sent him his personal files. Somewhere among Peter's papers, I assume, can be found that rather important historical material. The last time I saw Peter's father, I was leaving the family home, and he was sitting alone, taking in the sun. He was in a very fragile condition. He waved me over and looked at me very directly and said, "Give me your honest opinion. Do you think we will ever have socialism in America?" And I said, "Yes, provided we don't run out of Rosenthals." Those are my remarks at the tribute to Peter Rosenthal. The tributes to him will go on and on because his good work went on and will be discussed and praised, and it's, I would say, a historical marker. Again, this is the Taylor Report. I want to take you back to the subject I was discussing earlier, which is the role of this phenomenon I spoke of in those remarks of American exceptionalism. If they are exceptional, then we are not ourselves sovereign. They are a great power. They call themselves exceptional, which means that they get to do what they want to do on their own. And that's very dangerous to the world. And that takes me also to this point about what's unfolding in West Asia. We're now getting these silly front page updates that the talks are going forward, the talks are progressing, that the Mr. Blinken is flying back and forth. Well, anybody who's been around a while would remember Mr. Kissinger flying back and forth, or Carter, Secretary of State, flying back and forth. And what they're actually telling you is the U.S. owns the process. And you don't have a peace process. What you have is this a superpower that calls itself an exception. It does lead a little gang called the Five Eyes. And they call them, and they're permitted to get away with this insulting language of being a mediator. And over the weekend, for example, Joe Biden said, well, it looks like Hamas is backing off the agreement. We had an agreement, but it looks like Hamas is backing off. And the Secretary of State, Mr. Blinken, he says, well, Israel has agreed. And the responsibility now is with Hamas. That is not the language of a mediator. Whoever is doing that is not a mediator. A mediator keeps his mouth shut. He tries to bring the parties together. He doesn't put his thumb on the scales. He doesn't say that one's the bad guy. But that's exactly what the U.S. president did, and his secretary of state, Blinken, did. So why do we call that a mediation? That's not mediation. Actually, they're showing, and they're showing that they are going to guarantee an outcome. They're going to actually, frankly, their goal is to dictate it. They are pretending there is some kind of agreement being worked on. The Vice President Harris now gets to say, the president and I are working around the clock. Oh, baloney. And it isn't their business anyway. If they were working around the clock, here's what they would say to you. I've been on the phone to President of Russia. I've been on the phone to the President of France. I've been on the phone to and I'm having a meeting with the Prime Minister of the UK. Or I'm going to personally talk to the leader of China. These are all Security Council members. And we're going to work out an agreement where we, the Security Council members, will agree on a settlement that is satisfactory to the parties. That would be working around the clock. That would be serious. But what we're experiencing is not serious. This is pre-war or war massaging, because they the U.S. participated in this most recent attack on Lebanon, for example. They've always permitted Israel to bomb Syria whenever they feel like it. They permit them to bomb Gaza, and they say, "Oh, what is the expression? Tut tut, tut tut. You've been bombing. You probably ought to ease up." I mean, this is like a master with a nasty dog on a leash who keeps leading him up to people, and there's just barking and snapping, and occasionally somebody gets bit, and he says, "Oh, you probably shouldn't have done that." But meanwhile, the dog keeps advancing and biting. So It would be great, actually, if Canada would come out for sovereignty and exercise a little bit of independence. There have been moments, little bitty moments. Diefenbaker once talked back, and Kennedy became very cross with him. And Pierre Trudeau, father of this guy, the current one, Justin, was known to get on the nerves of Richard Nixon and others, just because he suffered from self-respect, and he thought, you know, I am the prime minister. I do get to say a few things to the Americans that they don't want to hear. And so they saw to it that he ceased doing that. So anyway, I believe that covers it. This is the Taylor Report. It is CIUT 89.5 FM. Pedro has been doing great work, and I want to tell you that Steve Fruitman is going to be coming up with 33, 45, 78. See you next time.